086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000, 074 91 25,000, and feel free to email comments at highlandradio.com. Right, let's go to line one now and say good morning to Fine Gael Minister Jennifer Carol McNeil, Minister of State at the Department of the Taoiseach and at the Department of Foreign Affairs. Thanks for joining us, Jennifer.
Good morning to you. Good morning to you.
Good to have us on the programme. Right, okay. So, I mean, there's been various reactions to this budget, some concerned at the short-term measures and the long-term impacts that might have, that this is a cost-of-living budget and not a cost-of-doing budget. But what's your assessment?
I think it's three things. I think it's a cost-of-living budget that recognises that people are feeling increased prices and increased costs. And because we have managed the public finances, because we have more money at the moment, we have really listened to people on what they're feeling on those increased prices. We know that it hurts the most just before Christmas, just after Christmas, in the winter period. And so we are fortunate enough to have the ability to support people with targeted cost of living measures to meet those increased prices at that time.
Okay, just but in relation to that, Minister, in terms of
building it into public finances. Yeah.
They're not targeted, yeah? though, are they? In that they are universal. You know, you're getting very wealthy people receiving double child benefit. You're getting very wealthy people receiving, you know, energy credits that perhaps they do not need. You've got very wealthy people receiving baby boosts and what have you. So it could have been more targeted, could it not?
There are some people, there are people in every part of Ireland who need extra pressure. And you're right, there are universal measures respecting and reflecting that. But there are also very, very targeted measures supporting, for example, the €400 lump sum payment to the working family payment. Or, for example, the additional supports for the fuel allowance, for the living alone allowance, for carers in particular, a lump sum payments to carers and domiciliary allowance recipients. So they are both. They are both universal and then additionally targeted at people whom we know need more money, particularly, for example, working family payments. So it's both, to be honest with you. But then there's also the main part of the budget, which we do every year, which is in relation to we're trying to reduce the pressure on tax, that people aren't paying the top rate of tax now until they hit €44,000, bringing down USC, and also increasing social welfare payments across the board with pensions, with carers, with disability, helping try to give people more money of their own money to spend. But that's all fine. But what we have to think about this budget, and you're right to highlight it, is while we have the money now, we know that we're not going to have it forever. And so we have to take a long-term approach. And this budget, like the last one, but particularly this one, helps us plan for the future. So we're putting money into the Future Ireland Fund, building up our own sovereign wealth that gives us a bit of independence in 10 years from now. We're putting money into infrastructure investment, into making sure that we can be secure in our energy for the future, energy resilient, securing our future through renewable energy, through building up the electricity grid, the connectivity grid, building up our roads and our ports so that we can make sure that we have this renewable energy so that we're not susceptible to these massive price hikes or price changes that we have really had to deal with over the last couple of years as a consequence of the invasion of Ukraine. So we need to secure our future now. And we do that through long-term planning. We have the cash now, so we're not spending it on day-to-day spending it. We are spending it on infrastructure, development of our roads, development of our schools, hospitals, and crucially, our energy network that is going to protect us for the future. And so we're able, because of the amount of money that we have now, and we won't have it forever, we have to invest for the long term. But we also have to remember that people have cost pressures in their lives today, and we can help with that a little bit at the moment.
But just in relation to that, Minister, are you not at all concerned, like people who know much more about things than I do, that these benefits, whilst they might seem like, you know, for your average worker, an extra €1,000 for those perhaps receiving benefits, you know, an extra €12 a week and other measures, there is a concern that this actually drives inflation or will drive inflation. And actually any of those advantages will be written off over the course of the year because flooding the economy with cash.
I respect all of those economists' views, and of course they also say to do what we're doing in terms of investing long term in our infrastructure.
I get you.
But inflation has come down from about 9% to about 1.5% over the last 3 years, and that's while we have been doing these additional supports. So economists are great and I respect what they're saying, but we live in a society and we live in a community, and we have to do more than just listen to economists. We are community leaders, political leaders, trying to support the people that we represent. And so I think we need to do both. I think we need to take the long-term view. We only have this money because of the way that we've invested and because of the way that we've behaved to date, and that, you know, Fine Gael and Pascal Donoghue has behaved to date. But we have this money now and we have to do both. We have to invest in the long-term, as economists tell us that we should do.
Yeah.
But economists aren't meeting constituents, seeing the pressure that they're under with their heating bills. And we are a compassionate society, a compassionate community. And by God, I'm going to give people money to support them when they need it. Well, we have to do both.
A lot of people, as you know, in Donegal, where I'm speaking to you from, we've the lowest disposable income, lowest incomes more generally speaking, a lot of people on the minimum wage, a lot of people working in hospitality. And just a word about businesses working in that area here, particularly food-led businesses that are employing these people. They're waking up this morning with extra costs, auto-enrollment pension, an increase in minimum wage, which the government gets the credit for, but it's the businesses that have to pay. They're more likely to have people that aren't on pensions, so they're going to be more affected by auto-enrollment. And then the one break they may have got was the return of the 9% VAT rate. So they're looking into a winter of discontent, and the 2025 the same. What have you done for those businesses that are the lifeblood here of a county like Donegal and many others across the country?
Yeah, and I recognise that that's a particularly difficult issue in hospitality, and I know Peter Burke is continuing to work on supports for those businesses. Of course, he's extended the winter energy credit for businesses that will get about €4,000. That's about 39,000 businesses that will get that. But I recognise that there's more to do there. There's a whole range of other businesses in Donegal. I was in Killybegs recently. There's a whole range of other small, you know, businesses in fabrics and fantastic businesses who will all benefit now as well from additional support in research and development, who will benefit from different investment opportunities, reducing the tax on those sides. But those can seem a little bit far away, but they are really important supports for businesses that are, you know, outside of the hospitality sector, that are really trying to scale up and develop and employ more people in the Donegal community. So there is more to do on that side. I recognise that, but I think what we're, you know, we have full employment at the moment. But we need to continue to invest in skills in our communities. And so we have released funding from a training fund, which is going to be specifically about helping people upskill and further develop to be able to make sure that we can have the skills that we need for the future.
What about the business? You haven't addressed the core question as it relates to, you know, what do you say to those businesses? You're talking about planning for the future. You know, we need employers in the future. You know, we seem to be paying the price for price gouging, dynamic pricing, and rip-off situations in the likes of Dublin. When, you know, why could we not have had more targeted support to recognise the important work and to support those smaller businesses that I'm talking of?
I agree. And the difficulty with the VAT rate, that as I've always understood it from the Department of Finance, is separating big hotels from, you know, smaller businesses.
Basically,
and not wanting to give...
Exactly how you're doing the 4,000 on rates or VAT or whatever.
Precisely, exactly. But on the VAT side, it's not possible to do that. We're being told by revenue, which is why last year there was a targeted support based on rates. And that's why this support is also based on rates. And that is an effort, and I think it will need to go further, but that is an effort to try to target supports at small, you know, coffee shops and smaller places, restaurants, rather than the big hotels in Dublin, who frankly don't need any more support.
Minister, in relation to you talking of the future and the money that's available, we have the ongoing huge overrun at the Children's Hospital. We've had the bike shed controversy. We've had the security shed controversy. We've also now learned that modular homes are costing almost twice as what they were meant to, and that OPW skipped due diligence early in that progress because we're in a panic to get things done, right? So with all of those things that I've mentioned, and I personally actually think some are more significant than others, but be that as it may, Minister, how can the public trust this government post-election if it's returned? How can they trust them to manage the public finances responsibly when we find out this reckless overspending, this lack of oversight that's there? That's only the stuff we hear about. How can you assure the public that we can trust Fine Gael and whoever they might coalesce with to actually spend our funds responsibly and with accountability?
Well, I understand, and as a former member of the Public Accounts Committee, it really frustrated me to see the lack of accountability from different public bodies on the day, on the minutiae of spending and how that is accounted for and how people are held responsible for that. I also think there's a disconnect and a lack of coordination between different government departments on the strategic nature of projects, the professionalisation of projects, centralised procurement processes. And that's why Simon Harris, nearly from the day he became Taoiseach, has said he wants a dedicated Department of Infrastructure to centralise, professionalise and manage the delivery of the really important infrastructure that we need and to make sure that it is done in a much more coordinated and professional manner. I think we need that. We've had both spending difficulties and under delivery. We've allocated money to projects that haven't happened or have happened far too slowly. I'm actually sitting outside Crumlin Children's Hospital as we speak on the phone to you and only waiting for the Children's Hospital to be delivered because we need it for our community. We need it for children right across Ireland and it needs to be delivered quickly, efficiently and within budget. But I do see projects that work very well. In my own area, we've just launched 600 affordable and social homes by the Land Development Agency, which were delivered both on time and within budget. So it's very clear it can be done. And there are, you know, many instances where it is happening. But that needs to be the absolute standard and not, you know, not an exception. And so I think a dedicated Department of Infrastructure that has the principles of the Land Development Agency at its core, a totally professional approach, is going to be a flagship of what Simon Harris wants to bring to a next government, a Fine Gael government after the election, to make sure that the delivery that I'm talking about, the investment that I'm talking about, that it happens, but that it happens properly. And, you know, people absolutely should expect that.
All right, Minister. Last question. I'm planning a holiday for October, November 22nd. Should I defer it?
I don't know. I wish I knew. I'm not planning a holiday in November, put it that way. Not that I would be at it,
well,
but I'm not planning
I.
a few days away over the Halloween.
I'm just
break
trying to find a different
else.
Way to ask the bloody question.
And right. Fair enough. Sure, look, it's chat all over, and I don't know, but there has to be an election before March. We have run the full term of the government. We've had a good, stable government for the people of Ireland. We want to go in now to the next phase with a good election where people can set out their stall, set out their vision for Ireland for the next phase. Responsible centrist government is what I hope we get back. A Fine Gael government is what I hope we get back to continue to build on the work that we've managed to do to date.
Minister, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeill. And, you know, I'm ultra conscious, particularly in counties like Donegal, of the potential impact this budget could have on small businesses, because as I say, it's almost unique. A lot of people in that sector employed on the minimum wage because margins are relatively low, right? So they're going to be faced with the minimum wage increase and, of course, to the auto-enrollment pension next year. And a lot of these schemes, you know, have to be repackaged because a lot of businesses either can't or don't avail of them for one reason or another. So, you know, I want to recognise, too, the important role that these businesses have in employing our young people, our middle-aged people, our older people, helping us pay our mortgages. And if you're in that area of business and you want to lay it out in factual terms, because I imagine businesses now are waiting on the budget and they're going to sit down now and they're going to have to look at the menus for the winter and they're going to have to look at the accommodation prices for the winter and they're going to have to say, right, these are our outgoings. This is our current incomes. And they're going to have to say, right, well, that main course is going to have to go up to 29 now or 32 or whatever it might be. So I'd say today's an important day for businesses. Right, we're going to take a break and come back then with a further assessment of the budget yesterday. Right, let's go to Dr. Joe Kelly, who normally joins us with his views on history or recounting history with us, but also, of course, a keen eye on current affairs and, I suppose, future ramifications Dr. Joe Kelly, you put pen to paper on an opinion piece, Budget Lies and Distractions. It doesn't sound like you're cheerleading for the government here.
Absolutely not. And even to add insult to injury, I noticed one of our Fine Gael senators in the county has a headline in the local paper, this is a budget for working families and for parents across Donegal.
But it is, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's a budget of lies and distraction. Look, you know, the government doesn't go to an ATM machine and take out money out of it and give it to us. Every penny the government makes, or sorry, spends, comes from our pockets. In other words, it's taxes we pay, and those taxes then are distributed by the government. So anything the government distributes is our money, our taxes. And if we don't have that money, we borrow it from the World Banks, and then we pay it back as well as interest, either we or our children. So when they're given this impression that the country's awash with money, it is far from truth that is. It's drowning with debt.
Yes, but we have a national debt. But just in relation to that, we are 16 billion euros being invested in the future by next year. We are writing down our national debt with the excesses that we're getting. And this money actually is being spent from a surplus, the corporation tax boost. So we're not borrowing to pay for an election like maybe we have historically. This is quite literally money that's in the cash register.
Well, let me put it in a real context. You see, this is the real thing. This is the real debt. Our country is about 250 billion of national debt. But that's not the issue, Greg. And this is where I'm talking to you about the budget for working families. As it stands at this moment in Ireland, the private debt of all people in Ireland, the individuals, not the country, individuals, stands at 857 billion. In the last 3 months, the people of Ireland, the ordinary man and woman of Ireland, has borrowed 20 billion, 20 billion to keep their heads above water. Our personal debt stands at 850 billion. Our national debt is 250 million. So in other words, we're almost a trillion in debt. And we're surviving as families because of debt. And this idea that it's a budget for working families and parents, we are being overtaxed. And the money they're giving us now in this budget is excess taxes that we have been paying. And see, Greg, the truth is, for a government to survive, they need to be inventive in getting more taxes, money from people. And look at this government. They brought in carbon taxes. They took in green taxes. They took in a concrete tax that our future children, when they go to build houses, will pay a tax on their concrete. This is extra taxes. And what they're doing now is spreading around some of this extra tax. And you know what it's like? I've talked to you before about the stinking rich and the corpses that used to smell in the churches in medieval times. They watch the smell of the stinking rich. We have a stinking government at the moment in regards to how we're being taxed. And what they've done with this budget has they've got a kind of a perfume aerosol and sprayed it all around as if it smells rosy and everything's grand. And we're to be deluded and fooled into thinking that everything is okay.
It comes down to, though, is, and I hate the phrase, is how much money is in people's pockets. And your average worker, though, is supposed to be €1,000 off. There's loads of benefits there for those who are unemployed or receiving state payments. There's bonuses for childcare. There's a reduction in fees for third level, which is a big barrier for a lot of families in Donegal. They're widening the qualification for SUSE grants. Fees being scrapped for junior and leaving cert, free books up to leaving cert. I mean, they might look at that and go, well, what else do you want, Joe? We're doing all we can to try and help people to survive and to educate themselves.
I'll start with this. And again, the title, that this budget's for working families. Why can we not have free third level education for all the students of this country, not just for the immigrants? If we can give free education, third level education to immigrants, why can we not give it to our own children? Because it's our taxes that are paying for these expenses. This is our money. And you're saying to me you're giving money here and there. We were given €1,000 every worker of a tax break with regards to the USC. They've reduced it. This USC, Universal Social Charge, which is a tax, was introduced during the recession to help the country pull out of recession. And we all put our shoulder to the wheel. That recession is well gone. They're telling us the country's awash with money. Then get rid of the USC and give working families a genuine real break. But you know what they're doing? They're taking €20 out of your back pocket, and by the way, we're going to put €2 into your front pocket. This is the distraction and the lies of this budget. They are not helping the ordinary family of this country. They are not helping us to get through the recession that we're in, or the crisis we're in, with rising prices, cost of living, and as I said, the private debt of the people of this country has increased by 20 billion. The people of Ireland in the last 3 months have borrowed 20 billion to survive. That says its own message. We are 850 billion of private debt.
We've 7 billion, apparently, as a state, the population of Ireland, household savings, €7 billion. It's gone up from 3 billion in 2019 to 7 billion now, but you might argue that's the stinking rich rather than your average. But Joe, I think
hold
it's worth,
on a minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a big difference, Greg. There's a big difference between saving 7 billion and being in debt to the tune of 157.4 billion.
A lot of that's going to be housing. Everyone wants
a
house.
Whether it's houses or not, it's debt, and it has to be paid off. Has it to be paid off, Greg, that 857 billion, that's 1,000 million, has interest.
Million.
So if you borrow if you buy a house and it's, for example, you're told it's 300,000 and you borrow off the bank, by the time you're finished paying for that house plus interest, it's 450,000. The house is not 300,000.
You see, I think, too, we have to be very careful here because, as you say, we've 42,000 euro. This is separate figures that you were mentioning, but we've got 42,000 euro of debt per person, man, women, child, babies in this country. For an open economy, a small open economy, that's massive. It totals around 223 billion gross debt for this country. Now, we are in a wash with money in inverted commas, but if you strip out the corporation tax, I think we have a deficit of about 5 or 6 billion. We are potentially, if that corporation and when it goes, corporation tax goes, we are in serious bother.
Well, two things here, and I agree with you. The national debt per person is 43,000 per person. That's the 250 billion. That's the national debt to keep our country going. And we noticed yesterday Pfizer are talking about withdrawing 250 people. This is the beginning of the kickback from the 13 billion we've got off Apple. These multinational companies are going to start relocating elsewhere. And Trump is talking about reducing corporation tax from 35% down to 15% in America, which will draw many American companies back. But look back to the 250 billion national debt. It's 43,000 per person. I hear that. But what is the actual real debt, private debt? It's four times that.
No. And I reference that these are separate figures. But I'm on about sort of really, you know, there's the macro and micro. I don't really understand all of that stuff. But the country as a whole, in terms of where we could go, a recession which would blow the roof off everything we're talking about now, if interest rates started spiraling, inflation started spiraling, like, if we lose this corporation tax now, if we lost it now, we'd be in a deficit. And we have an incredibly high national debt per head of population, given the type of economy that we have, which is really quite worrying. But anyway, finally, Joe, because I know you've got other things to do, what you're saying is people are texting in and saying, you know, Joe's telling the truth, 100% truth. But this is a giveaway budget, and it's a giveaway budget ahead of an election, because then people go out and they vote for this government. So people might say that you're talking sense, but people will vote based on this budget. So really, we as a public, and when I say we, I don't include myself because I'm impartial, of course, we're complicit in this. We're complicit in this game. We're allowing our votes to be bought.
Absolutely. And look, I'm a father and I'm a family man. And I know the real price of a carton of milk and a unit of electricity. I know the real struggles that I have in my home, which is represented in everybody's home. I know the price of fuel. I know the price of things that have gone up and how difficult it is to survive. And for the government to come along and telling us this is a budget for working families across Donegal is, for me, is a distraction. It's a lie. It's not true. And so the question is then, what do we do? And like for me personally, you know, I'm just thinking of Micah. There are families today in our county. There are parents and children that are suffering. Mm. And it's not just that their homes are crumbling. It's that their lives, their families are crumbling. And again, where are they in this budget? And so when it comes to the next election, we have a moral duty and also a responsibility, a social responsibility to ensure that those families, those homes are put top of our priority list of what we want for our country.
That requires an alternative to the incumbents, trusting them, whomever it might be, to actually deliver on that. It's not a fait accompli. You voting this government out doesn't automatically guarantee that you're in a better position. Let me ask you just one final question, though.
Yes.
Come end of 25, I'm not digging into your personal finances, I'll be somewhat better off, a little bit better off. Come the end of 2025, you talked about the struggles as a working family, and we all feel that too. You'll be better off, though. The government will have put money back into your pocket, Joe.
Yeah, but hold on a minute. They've taken so much out in the first place. My electricity is the most expensive electricity in the EU. Mm. And so I'm paying tax on that. So I'm paying double the tax that any other EU person is. So they're taking it out somewhere else. And by the way, we're giving you... Do you know what it's like, Greg? It's like nailing a man to a floor with 10 nails and pulling one out of them and say, there you go, that's what we're giving you in the budget. Aren't we very good to you? But you're still nailed to the floor. And that's what's happening to families across this county and across this country. Okay. And people need to speak up. And there's no point in people coming along saying, you know, great fella Joe, you're telling the truth and all the rest. People themselves need to take responsibility and accountability and looking for politicians that will articulate the truth.
Do you see, finally, last question, it's a yes or no, but of sentence. Do you see then a viable alternative to deliver what you talk of to the current government, honestly? And I'm on about a viable, not an individual, I'm on about a collective of people, a party or a coalition. Do you see a viable alternative to the Fianna Fáil Fine Gael Green Party out there at the moment?
What I do see is that there are alternatives. There are other voices. But having said that, there are good voices in Sinn Féin and Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the Greens. There are good people across all parties and none. And those people need to start speaking and being heard. And what's happening here is we have a top-driven political system rather than a grassroots political system. I have no doubt there are good politicians and good people in every party, but they're not being heard and they're not representing the people, and they need to get representing the people. They need to start speaking for the people. So when you ask me that, it's not about necessarily having an alternative. It's about the authentic voice of the people being represented by the politicians we elect, whether that's in a party or not in a party. But we need to have authentic representation, politicians that will tell the truth, politicians that will represent us in an honest way. And so it's not about who you're voting for anymore. It's about what you're voting for.
People are going to say then, we've talked about hurling on the ditch. Is it in a time then that you... dust off your posters and go again, Joe? Because where are these voices? People might say, well, you know, you're the voice then. You've got not all the answers, because that sounds like I'm being disparaging, which I'm not.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe if you be the change you want to be, or whatever that phrase is.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I understand, and I've been asked that by a terrible lot of people. To be honest with you, that's not on my horizon, but there are good people standing in this next night election.
All right, Joe, I have to go. You have to go.
And so they should be given a chance.
And it sounds like you've got the same dose I have. I must have caught it off you on Zoom last week. All right, then. Take care of yourself, Joe. Thanks.
Okay.
A caller says, government make out the average wage is 55K. I'm working in the same job for 31 years, and my gross wage is 42K. Well said, Dr. Joe. Yeah, indeed. Our wages here are 23% below the national average. The average weekly wage... And there are some high earners and there are some low earners, and that's the average. Even might seem a long distance away for many out there, but the average weekly wage in Donegal is €567. Nationally, it's €700, bar the shouting. So we are 23% lower than the national average. So when we talk of averages on a national level, we are well down in relation to that. That man's right. The government keeps saying we're one of the richest countries in the world. It's all fake. How is a country? How can a country be so rich if it's deep in debt? Another great here, Dr. Joe Kelly, calling out what this budget is all about. It's a political budget, not an economic one. Guess what people will fall for? Hopefully not, they say. Why no help for the hospitality sector, who are on their knees, restaurants closing every week? And I fear, I really genuinely fear that we're going to start see some, you know, and I think all our cafes and restaurants, if they're currently working at the moment, they're very good. You know, I could name dozens of them. But I think there'll be some tough conversations being had as heading into a long, dark winter. And with what's coming in 2025, some people might say, right, that's it. I'm pulling the shutters down. Good interview, Greg. They seem to roll over. They seem to roll her out every often these days because she's good at defending the government. Yeah, but I didn't hear a coherent argument back. And this is what's going to be done to support businesses there. And you know, in an interview, sometimes what's not said is as important sometimes as what is said. Greg, what was the point in setting up a fiscal advisory board if you're going to ignore everything they tell you? The fiscal advisory board, I there's certain elements of the way they think that, as I said before, and I didn't articulate it very well, you know, interest rates are increased to keep the foot in your neck, effectively, and to slow everything down until such time as the economy picks up, and then they take the foot off your neck, and then inflation rises and so on and so forth. So I wouldn't go along with what the fiscal advisory says and everything. A caller says, we don't want subsidies. Fix the problems. We can't carry on depending on government to bail us out every year. That's not business. Turn us all into the farming sector. A caller says, we've the highest fuel in the EU, and in rural Northwest, where we have no proper infrastructure, it's really felt. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil don't get it. It's time for change, believes that listener. I don't think that the government should be giving a Christmas bonus to every PAYE worker. It should be giving a bonus. The reason being is that they head to work every day and don't get much in return. Every worker should be treated the same as social welfare recipients. This budget to me is an insult to pensioners, people in disability and carers. Any young person that goes on to education and a good job can't afford to buy a home in Ireland. They have to leave Ireland. The government is a disappointment, but the government would argue that they are investing very heavily into the future, into infrastructure, into housing development to fix that problem. The problem is it's long term, and you kind of have to trust, don't you? You have to trust on delivering. Morning, Greg. So unfair. Students studying in the north get nothing. Why can't they not have a cross-border initiative like healthcare? Just wondering. Thanks. That's a question I put to Simon Harris recently when he was on the show with us. He said they were looking into it, but nothing in this budget. I'll chase that up. Joe Kelly's 100% right. We are in so much debt, and to describe the great management, shocking stuff. What about the extra spend on the children's hospital, not to mention the bike shed, security hut, etc.? How is that managing the funds? As a carer, I, like thousands of others, was catapulted into a life of caring for my child from birth. I had and have no choice. Her condition needs 24/7 care. I gave up my career because I had no choice. And no, we don't always have a choice as carers. As a result, my husband has to take on the added financial responsibility and stress, such as the bills. They don't disappear when you become a carer. In fact, they increase dramatically. €12 extra a week is welcome, but carers being means tested is just another kicking in the gut. We don't have a choice, and we're saving the state billions. How is it fair to means test the carers? Well, Sinn Féin, one of their proposals is to get rid of means testing for carers. Hi, Greg. I'm not long on invalidity. I beg your pardon. Hi, Greg. I'm not long on invalidity pension. I welcome the double payment. I worked since I was a teenager, paid my taxes and PRSI. Unfortunately, I got hurt at work. I had to get reports from doctors and letters to deem me unfit for work. I would love to be able to still contribute to society, but can't manage it. I, for one, am glad of the double week in October and December, plus the electricity credit as well. I have a mortgage to pay. And also, I'm very keen to hear from people like that lady or gentleman there, who this budget means something to, that it takes the pressure off. OK, so if you were very stressed about Christmas or school or sending someone to third level, we don't know all the details. It's important as well, too, because I want it to be as nuanced and balanced as possible, that if you're looking at this and going, right, you know what? I can breathe a little bit now. My shoulders can drop. I think I can see my way through this. If the budget has done that for you, I want to hear from you as well, by the way. We aren't here. This is not an opposition programme. I really am very keen to hear from those also, as we've also already heard from Fine Gael and others, that if this is of a benefit to you, let us know that as well. Because often, of course, we're going to highlight, any radio station will, or any programme will highlight what's not good, but also we're trying to platform what is good. And I hope that's come across in some of my questioning, but also keen to hear from you, the listener. The budget's doing nothing for me as a pensioner, says a listener. The €12 does not cover the rise in food in the past year. Insurance, fuel, etc. You can't even get a breakfast for €12 these days. It can be tough, but it can be got, but that's not your point, and I understand. Let me see. Right, I can move on to other stuff here. What happened in the Middle East is terrible. What's happening? It's a terrible slaughter of lives on both sides while the rest of the world stands by and says nothing. It's time it changed, the killing of innocent people. Have we learned nothing from a war? It's a sad world, but unfortunately the world's not standing by and saying nothing. For instance, the United States and Britain have backed Israel 110% to do whatever they wish to do to Iran in response to what Iran did to Israel, in response to what Israel did to Gaza, Hamas and Hezbollah. So it's a never-ending circle and an eye for an eye and all that stuff. Morning, Greg. On Saturday, I went into a cafe in Letterkenny. I got 2 scones and a pot of tea. Total price, €10. Never again will I go to that cafe. How big were the scones? I know there's tiny little scones, but then there's those big, luxurious ones. And if you got 2 of those and a pot of tea for 2 and you were able to top the water up? It wouldn't be for me because it's not the type of thing I do. But is that terrible value? Maybe they're poxy little scones. We were speaking yesterday to a rep from McCool Park. A caller says, regarding the rubbish in McCool Park, I was at a game in O'Donnell Park last year. Once full-time whistle went, the club members with yellow jackets started collecting the rubbish at each row of seats. Maybe they could do the same. Yeah, or maybe whoever dumped the trash at their feet could pick it up themselves. Like, I wouldn't want to be standing in a stand and a fellow community member in a yellow bib coming picking my rubbish up at my feet. You know, like, we need to pick it up ourselves and we need to tell our children, oi, pick that up now and put it in your bin on the way out. I get where you're coming from, but these are our community resources here. O'Donnell Park is all of ours. McCool Park is all of ours. And the people that are working there are volunteers and friends and family. I don't want them picking up after me. I'll pick up after myself and I'll make sure my children do the same. Dolores is with me on line one. Good morning, Dolores.
Good morning, Greg. Beautiful morning.
It is a beautiful morning. Thank God for it. And tomorrow's going to be nice as well, Dolores. So it does give a wee spring in the mood. Right, we're talking about wheelchair access in 2024. What have you observed or what's your experience, please, Dolores?
Well, Greg, I have to admit that I was totally ignorant about the situation until my husband ended up in a wheelchair about 12 months ago. And I have found that a lot of the HSE buildings, with the exception of the hospital, have no wheelchair access.
Really?
And a lot of the doors are, you know, they have those spring-loaded hinges. So if you have someone in a wheelchair, you leave them for a second, you push the door open, and by the time you get back to the wheelchair, the door is closed.
Yeah, it's
again.
A two-person job, effectively, it becomes, doesn't it?
It is for most of the buildings. And I've often had to call out to people, members of the public, to help me.
Yeah.
I don't know. The only one that is the most probably worrying is the centre, the HSE centre down at Skelly Place.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was coming out of that building one evening and it was getting dark and I was pushing my husband and I didn't realise the surface was so uneven.
Right.
And I had to dip or some kind of hole in the surface. And he nearly went flying out of the chair.
Oh, my word. Okay, nightmare.
That surface is very, very uneven. And you cannot get parked either. It's impossible to get parked because there's not enough wheelchair, you know, reserve spaces for people who are in wheelchairs.
And you need width too, don't you, Dolores? It's not just the parking space, the width of the car. I imagine you need greater width too for your husband to be able to get, firstly, to get the chair in and out of the car, but also for him to get in and out of the car.
Yes, you need that as well. But you also need the width I don't know the hub.
Yes.
It's a very nice centre, but again, and there's a level area, but then you have to get in, and it's again a spring-loaded hinge, and it's a very narrow door.
Uh-huh.
It's not wheelchair friendly.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, in terms of private premises and what have you, that might be a different story altogether. But I think certainly you would expect that HSE buildings would be completely accessible.
Well, you know, I just don't understand. I just basically do not understand. My head is wrecked trying to think, why is this like this?
Yeah.
And why are people, you see, people don't want to complain, Greg, because people feel they're going to be unpopular, they're going to be disliked.
Yeah.
If they go into a building and they say to the staff there, look, this was a nightmare getting mm-hmm. in here with this wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen people struggling to get into buildings with wheelchairs and they didn't complain, they didn't say anything.
Yeah. Because you've a lot to deal with as well. Firstly, this is a change in life for both you and your husband as well, because by the sounds of things, he's recently started to use a wheelchair, and now all of this is becoming apparent, and it makes life more difficult when life can be difficult already, Dolores.
Well, it's challenging.
Oh, challenging.
It's challenging. It's a challenge, but it is frustrating, very frustrating. And you do become very, in one instance, I was quite annoyed,
yeah.
very annoyed actually. And I did complain to a member of staff about it, you know.
Okay.
But
Dolores, I would like to get more of, we have fantastic information from you there, but I'd like to throw it out to the wider public as well, as it relates to access, the difficulty in access, where you might expect to get access. And maybe more people can, we can maybe highlight this more. If that's all right, Dolores. But for now, best wishes to you and your husband, and I hope you can enjoy the good weather. And I really appreciate you raising that issue with us. If that's something that resonates with you, or there's an issue out there like that that you wish to raise, please let us know. Maybe you've experienced at a building where you should expect to get access, and we should expect it of all. But obviously that's not going to be the case. But certainly I think HSE buildings, doctor's surgeries and what have you, you'd expect to have proper access in a wheelchair, wouldn't you?